Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Mod State Podcast. How you doing, my friend?
First world problems. Things can always be worse. It's always great to be here, so better now.
I'm gonna say in America, it's always just a first world problem, right?
Right. Yeah. I could agree with that. And again, it's always the opportunity for things to improve.
Indeed. Indeed.
So I think we're in good shape now that we've reconvened.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, as always, to our listeners domestically and internationally, thank you for tuning into the Mod State Podcast. And as always, we'll have to plug it. You can head over to modstate.com and read your newest article that dropped.
Oh, Lord. It's definitely quite a plug there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a well-articulated kind of six-pillar article about what Trump could do to be reelected. Again, it doesn't really point to the fact that we are or you are a Trump supporter necessarily, but it's more or less what I've found is a six ways that Trump could effectively hands down win the 2020 election.
Well, yeah, it's by no means an endorsement. It's me saying, I think, in far more lucid fashion than a lot of the people around him. I'm only taking that. It's not an insult to them. It's me taking that as what I'm seeing right now. I feel like that half dozen bullet points, he does those things, then I think, and the closer we get to the election, the less of a window there is for him to do that. But he does those things a year out, even, mm-hmm. much less starting now, and stays on message. That's the trick. But if you read the article with the mind of, okay, forget my feelings on this, and that's why I opened the article that way. If you forget your feelings and those six things happen, then I find it very difficult. I'm not sure how much of a path there is for him not to win. Mm-hmm. Now, whether anybody in his inner circle or campaign, et cetera, I think it's a good idea and would let him ever see any of that, I don't know, and I'm not concerned with that. That's why I didn't send it to the White House. I'm not endorsing him. But it's a lot of it's tongue-in-cheek. Some of it, of course, there's gray area, and it's not intended to be a policy paper, because mm-hmm. I can hear it now. There's tweaks that would have to be made to it. But if you take the items in the spirit of what they are and picture him implementing those things, doing those things, I think if you're honest, it would be rather difficult to foresee even a Joe Biden finding those things surmountable.
Mm-hmm. And there was before we dive into the meat of this episode, I found there's a couple polls floating around. It's been interesting that the president's approval rating really hasn't been above 50%, and that becomes difficult with re-election, as it seems that there's a higher percentage of people who would like to see him not re-elected. However, regardless, I don't think those type of polls should let anyone who's anti-Trump sleep at night, because, again, we're 18 months out, and, there's a lot that could happen. There could presumably be a bit of a war. Who knows? Well, we'll talk about that. But potential recession and fallout from tariffs and whatnot. So there's a lot more to be seen. There's a lot more that he could do to make him. I mean, this is kind of probably wind up turning into like a Friday news roundup, but we'll see where it goes. But there is something to be said about the way he opened a rally down in Florida, and it really isn't again reaching out to any wider than his staunch base that's already established. So we'll see. I'm curious to see how whoever manages his campaign this go-around, what they do to bring more to the table, right? Because it seemed dark. It seemed, Make America Great Again. It almost sounded like America is not really that great, and he hasn't really done a good job over the last 3 years.
Well, that was kind of the idea, the spirit of the article. Is, again, it's not something that I've sent to the president or to his campaign, and I don't intend to do so. It was more or less, okay, what can you do to broaden your horizons, broaden your tent, in spite of everything? Because, you know, 17, 18 months is a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, and I'll throw a couple of them out there. Things like embracing not the legalization of cannabis, placate the base, you'd say, all right, we're going to decriminalize it and go along with this thing y'all say you love so much, and that's states' rights. Let the states decide. And that's a way he could straddle that fence. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, there would be an uptick in his popularity there. Yeah. There's a number of pragmatic things in it. For instance, people are going to find it ridiculous, the sixth bullet point, and that's part of the point, because it's supposed to be. Some of his behavior has been ridiculous.
Yeah.
But if you listen, close your eyes and just, well, it's hard to do that and read, but if you read this and just imagine him saying what I put in bullet point six to close out the State of the Union next year, I think it, whether people want to admit it or not, I believe it would go a long way towards that end. And I meant what I said also, however snarky some of it is, in the first point. Don't waste your time. Don't even show up in the state of California.
Yeah. Well, and I think that last bullet point would show some reconciliation without outwardly apologizing. But
right,
we'll let the listeners read it.
Right. I would recommend people read it and read it again from the perspective of this is not me saying he should be reelected. This is not me saying, and I'm trolling in a lot of it myself. Okay, but for him to broaden his tent, bring in more supporters, and yes, as a byproduct, you'd have an uptick in popularity rating. It's just, it's hard to look at that list and say, gee,
yeah,
it wouldn't help his popularity. You know, I don't think there's any way that any of that could hurt it.
No, I don't think so.
It might hurt his popularity in Central Valley, California.
Well, yeah, but
not showing up.
Yeah, and I had another thought, and I'm losing it now, but I think, yeah, as like I said, as we get closer, we'll see. I think
it's a long time out.
Yeah, I think when you look at his what he will run on, right? And again, there's always going to be 30-40% that love the guy no matter what. But in terms of what he has done, I mean, there's going to be national security or foreign relations stuff that he'll be able to send home, like the Iranian deal.
And he's had a good week in terms of possibly impressing people outside of his base. If you look pragmatically, if you look realistically at how he's handled the last week, I color me impressed.
Yeah. And like I said, we'll get to that kind of the main talking point here next. But one thing that I wonder, again, that 30 to 40% solid, no questions asked. But in terms of expanding his base, the things that he has done, like big ticket items like tax reform, you know, I think that's going to be difficult to sell to those people who are straddling the fence, because regardless of, you know, the corporate tax break, et cetera, and the reality of tax returns for individuals, you know, they touted this as a huge win for the middle class. And I think it's going to be a hard pill for the middle class to swallow in terms of how well they did from this tax return in context to how well corporations did. I think that will be a harder one to sell. Again, 30 to 40% aren't going to care.
Sure.
But there's going to be that movable middle that looks at that.
I encourage people to look at the six holistically.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's the middle of the day, so I can do a podcast with a cup of coffee. Cup of coffee in the big time.
Golly. Oh, man.
Well, let's just move on. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's happened this week, but I think the take home right now would be what's going on with Iran. And what
right,
we do,
I mean, I'm trying not to get us off topic here. You had a very specific one that you wanted to come in here with.
Yeah, but I think it's important to, we'll be talking more and more about the 2020 cycle, and we can make it, again, kind of shorten what the meat of the podcast episode is about, because there's not a whole lot there, but it's definitely interesting. So what we know is,
it's a possible win for the president as it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, here's where I think the win is negated. And what we know is on Monday, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard or Defense Force shot down what they call an unmanned, well, it's UAV essentially, $100,000 UAV that has a wingspan greater than like a Boeing 737. They supposedly shot it down in international airspace in around the Strait of Hormuz. And the president tweeted that was a big mistake. And then we found out last night, roughly, that the president had authorized some military action on some missiles and radar defense systems in Iran. And 10 minutes before the strike was to happen,
It was
going to
be huge.
He ordered it off after apparently he got in kind of a pre-damage assessment or intelligence from sources there that said there'd be roughly 150 casualties. To which the president, to his credit, to the credit of the president and fairly well articulated for the president on the fly, said that he found that it was quote unquote not proportionate of a reaction.
The punishment didn't fit the crime, in other words.
Exactly.
Which I thought was the right call.
It was.
He erred on the side of human rights, which is, in my view, never a bad place to err.
So, because I believe if he had gone forward, even without the 150 casualties, I think there would be a fairly bipartisan outcrying against it, as if it's like, Jesus, so they killed or they shot down a UAV. And we blew up. I mean, we actively went into Iran and dropped missiles. So even then, without the casualties, I don't know that it would be a proportionate retaliation. Now, there's a couple things floating around about this. The first being, I found it strange to find the president of the United States arguably a moderate within his administration for not going through with this. I feel if the president had gone to bed and told his staff that John Bolton was in charge of this operation, that it absolutely would have gone through. I think John Bolton's been trying to get his rocks off and dropping bombs in Iran for like the last 20 years.
Right, John Bolton's more of a hawk even than Mike Pompeo is. And I would go so far as to say, in terms of foreign policy, aside from the twin responses to Syrian chemical attacks in which we struck then, aside from that, I would argue that the president's been downright dovish, rhetoric notwithstanding.
No, I absolutely agree. It almost happened, right? And here's where I think the win of his articulation as to why he stepped down is sort of negated, and that's because this Iranian buildup of tension has been a direct result of his action against the status quo at the time. And essentially what I mean is that this is a mess that he's created. And some people argue
Do you really think that? Or do you think it's a mess created by a deal that we should never have signed?
Well,
in my view.
No, it's a good question.
Here's why I oppose it. Okay, it's because in the long run, it didn't prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. It just punted the ball down the field, which American government loves to do. The other side of this is, in addition to punting it, it's one that even some of the Democrats have said, look, this needed long term to be renegotiated. I know there's disapproval that he just pulled us out of it, but the issue, look at how Iran's acting now in this perspective of they're threatening to hold the Strait of Hormuz, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I hope, to hold the entire situation hostage, you know, like a toddler not getting their way. I don't think Iran's really vindicating themselves here, if you will.
Well, look, I think the argument becomes, because I see your point, it's sort of a chicken and the egg, right? The thing I have about punting the ball down the road is that even if you do punt it down the road, there was something in place, right? And right. So that builds time for renegotiation. That builds time for relationship building. It gives time for potential organic regime change in Iran. You have people that grow up. You have people that come to power. So you're not necessarily punting the ball down the road. You're extending the timeline of things you can do. And that's always the problem I had with people who are against it. It's sort of like instant gratification versus, we're not punting it down the road. We're extending the timeline. We're building relationships. It's called diplomacy. And no one was dying from a nuclear bomb.
That's true.
And so the next thing is, so now you have an Iranian nation and government who really had some deep exploration, introspection. They're very much an open book to the nations of the world. And here comes Donald Trump, pulls out of it, and implements sanctions again in Iran, something that really kind of devastated the population there.
So I'm cognizant of that. I am.
So my thing is, you know, it wasn't as if we just pulled out of the Iranian nuclear deal, and then just tensions increased. It just went to bombing UAVs. I mean, this has been a 3-year process of tensions building, sanctions.
Here's my other issue with this, though. I'm not sure if it was this week. I believe it was this week. It might have been last week, though, that America pulling out of the deal, I might point out, did not negate the entire deal. They still had the deal in place with China, Russia, and Europe. The other 15 countries involved.
Yes.
And even still, notice what Iran said, that while we're going to accelerate our timeline ahead of where it was anyway with uranium enrichment. And that for me was a moment, because I go, I see. So really, this is just y'all saying, basically in a backhanded way, them admitting to bad behavior. This is them saying, well, Donald, this gives us, President Trump gives us a perfect excuse, but we're going to go ahead and accelerate. So they're basically giving the middle finger to the Europeans, China, and Russia, which I find Russia crying foul hilarious anyway, because I'm going, y'all have never acknowledged the mess that you helped create in the Middle East. Why Russia is not one of the leading actors in the war on terror, I'll never know.
Yeah.
But that was a very revelatory comment for Iran to make.
Yeah, and I think, of course, they're flexing their muscles now. I think because the president's rhetoric, and not necessarily the president's rhetoric, but his hawkish Bolton types making claims. It isn't even what's necessarily said. It's who's in power, right? I mean, you think they're firmly aware of who John Bolton is, and they've known about this guy. So it isn't necessarily even things that need to be said. It's people who are in power and have the ability to pull strings. So, you know, if we were still in the Iranian nuclear deal, I don't know that you would see this happening. It's they're flexing their muscles where they can. And
so they may as well just had a deal with America then, I suppose.
It's exactly it. I mean, America pulls the most weight, and that's what.
Well, so that invalidates the entire deal, though, is my point. I'm going, and I get it. It feels like I'm making a point for the opposition here, but in reality, I'm going, that to me shows how piss poor, pardon my phraseology here, my French, but it shows how terrible it really was, that really it was meaningless for China, Russia, and Europe to be involved whatsoever.
Well, I think it just goes to show that the weight that America still holds, right? And that's why I think there were so many people that took problem with the isolationist type doctrine. And I think if anything, that's a badge of honor the United States carries. And again, I don't see it as punting the timeline. I see it as an opportunity for diplomacy.
Well, another problem with the deal is that it didn't in any way hamstring the viciousness, the human rights violations of the nonstop proxy wars that Iran continues to wage. It didn't stop that in the least. It didn't curtail it at all.
And I won't for a second sit here.
Why should we reward them by lifting sanctions?
Yeah, I am not for a moment discounting the fact that they are engaged in numerous proxy wars and bombing Saudi airfields or pipelines, et cetera. That very much is happening. I think at the end of the day, the question is, what sort of consequence do we have? So we have to measure the potential consequences to the two status quos, right? So the first would be the Iranian nuclear deal. The second would be the fallout from starting to dropping bombs in Iran at military targets. Like, what, when you look at potential outcomes, long-term outcomes, short-term outcomes, which is more beneficial, right? And what gets you, because ultimately, I mean, we talked about this precast, regime change in Iran looks a lot different from a regime change in Iraq. That's just the bottom line. And I don't think there's we're sort of stuck in this limbo, right? Because I guarantee that the American public, without even doing a poll, that the American public is war weary, and do not want to see any military intervention in Iran that would escalate to potential war. Now, John Bolton goes against that.
The difficulty here is that Iran knows that. Okay, we wouldn't even get involved. Not pointing this out to be snarky, but we wouldn't even get involved after President Obama's red line was violated, and President Assad of Syria used chemical weapons on his own people. So the Iran knows that the American people are exhausted with the idea of warfare, and it hamstrings our foreign policy to a certain degree. I'm not so sure that a tactic of using our battle groups and using regional air bases and targeting specifically the miniature Navy that they field in that strait, taking out the fast boats, isn't an answer. F-35 strikes. Say, all right, this is what you're going to do. You're going to attach mines. Even Congressman, Democrat from California, Adam Schiff, acknowledged that that's the case, that Iran is responsible for the attacks. So, yeah. To me, take out the damn mini fleet. There's an answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of radar and missiles, et cetera, like, I think...
avoid mainland strikes.
Exactly. I think if you want to take out the continuing irritation in that international sort of trade route, that's what you do. You take care of that, or you at least build some international coalition or support to do that. Because again, the oil that helps propel the world economy is vital to every country, as opposed to some mainland strike. So I agree with you there. And I think the president realized...
Have you seen gas prices recently?
Well, they should drop, if I look at that correctly.
Prices are below where we thought they were going to be. They're below nationally, if I'm not mistaken, below $2.50 a gallon.
Yeah.
Roundabouts.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we've seen any real consequence here from choking off the flow of Iranian oil. I'm sorry, but I'm not seeing that they have any cards here.
No, they don't necessarily. I mean, obviously, Iran's used the tactic of flooding the world oil market to basically screw with OPEC. But really, that the drop in oil prices now has been from domestic production of oil or extraction of oil in the United States.
So why would we relent at this point? What incentive would we have to relieve pressure on Iran economically when they're not abiding? Take America out of this, going, well, look at their motives. You obviously don't really want a deal, or you'd be going along with the deal for the sake of the Europeans and Chinese and Russians that you signed it with. So what incentive does the administration have to back off and relieve pressure by ending the sanctions?
Yeah, and I guess my thing is I don't necessarily care about the sanctions. What I care about is this escalation of tensions that could produce loss of life. And it's
so,
not that.
So what would you suppose they do?
Well,
my question.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I think my gut reaction, quite frankly, is the kind of the long term game, long term pressure, not necessarily sanction pressure, but. You know, you have the opportunity, you create a deal, and then you go back to the table, and you continue to go back to the table. I mean, there's some things that could be punted for a very long time. I mean, it's sort of people like A to B is done, wrap it up, case closed. But in the world, and world economies, and governments, and institutions, that to me, there's just some things that you might not have a closed chapter on. And who knows what happens in Iran over the period of time that you continue to go to the table for negotiations and diplomacy.
You sound like the beginning of Phantom Menace there. Madala herself.
Madala herself. Negotiations. But anyway, I mean, there's a number of things that there's no way to predict.
You're the George Friedman guy here. So here's the station together in Bethesda.
Here's another thing. Here's another thing that I find troubling, right? And China plays this long game too, and that's because of state-run institutions.
They have a leader for life.
And Iran, in arguably the same way, can play the long game. There is no reason to really bow to anything that Trump proposes, or even coming to the negotiation table with Donald
Trump. That's why I'd like to point out the president was right. Forget whether pulling out of the treaty was a good thing or not. Let's say for a second it wasn't, that everybody hates it. All right, cool. The move. But it was the right thing to do, since we withdrew, in my opinion, to then say, all right, well, we're not going to have any more of these waivers for the sanctions. I think there were 15, 16 groups that had the waivers. I think that was the right thing to do. Say, no, we're gonna squeeze harder. Because to me, that's the only thing you can do short of state-on-state warfare, unless you want to really – I mean, but the idea of even our own proxy warfare and sponsoring a Saudi-led effort – that then brings in the confusion of Israel being involved. I mean, that's a quagmire that nobody wants to see. And so
it sounds like the Middle East.
Right. It does. Pretty much everybody gets dragged into that. At this point, though, the next move, as it were, is up to Iran. I mean, I have Cortana popped up with updates constantly on my laptop and my phone to. I keep waiting, no pun intended, for the bomb to drop, for Iran to do something that's going to force the administration to act. That's the thing that I would say is my biggest concern at this point is, I call it falling piano syndrome. It's walk outside, it's a sunshiny day, and then blam!
Oh, and it might. I mean, you don't, again, we have the ability to sit back with information, et cetera, and you don't know. I mean, no one predicted they'd shoot a UAV down. And if Trump really doesn't respond the way maybe they thought he would, or really ultimately it's flexing muscle, right? They fire some missiles. You know, you got to think of the Iranian government here. What? So they fire some missiles and 150 of our people die. Who cares? Let's just see how far they'll go.
At some point, the administration may have to respond. You got to remember that the United Kingdom just dispatched 1,000 more Royal Marines to the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Their naval forces are joining with our battle group over there. It's, to me, at this point, I'm going, Iran, how much of a death wish do you have? It's like a Clint Eastwood moment.
It really is. It's. Are you really doing this? I mean, that... It's really
the thing. If they do drag us into something, to me, in my mind, you may as well go to the wall.
Yeah.
Not as far as much as you got, as quick as you got, because the American people don't want a 15-year war here. I don't think it's possible for it to last that long, because the very nature of said conflict would necessitate it being expeditious. I mean, it's going to draw everybody into it. And that's another issue here, is because Iran has been Russia's proxy, sponsee here, and Saudi Arabia has been ours. This potentially draws in a whole new realm, a whole new level of escalation, drags both the United States and Russia into this.
Yeah, which
I'm not sure that anybody really wants to see.
Especially Russia and the United States. I mean, when you're really looking at the, I mean, again, this becomes a really
watch the movie War Games.
Yeah, this becomes a very interesting geopolitical chess game, and I think right now you're seeing a bit of posturing, and ultimately, I don't think much will come from this. I think this will die down by next week, and you know, tensions will remain high, but what you'll see is you'll start seeing tit for tats within the Strait of Hormuz. And you'll probably see Iranians becoming more and more emboldened to do things. I mean, ultimately, it's ridiculous that they're attaching mines to oil tankers. I mean,
I gotta say, I don't have that. I hope you're right. I don't have the same feeling on this one, that this is going to quietly become a nothing burger by next week, because North Korea had nothing in their mind to be gained by engaging in conflict. Venezuela, same deal, okay? And no country around them in South America really wanted to see that go beyond their borders. Iran's different because it, not only are they far more equipped than either of the previous two aforementioned states, again, it drags, while their ongoing proxy conflict with Saudi Arabia becomes more pronounced, their Iran's sponsor, Russia, inevitably has to get involved. We're not going to isolate Saudi Arabia or Israel. This is a far greater issue. And of course, Europe has already shown. I mean, the United Kingdom, with all the chaos going on there, is escalating their presence. Mm-hmm. This becomes potentially a full-on NATO versus Russia conflict, and Iran has to be cognizant of these things. They have to be. So I'm just not so sure. I hope you're right. And I'm not saying there's going to be some sort of, God forbid, nuclear blast or anything, but I'm not getting the feeling that this is going to go away quite so easily.
Well, I'm curious to see, this is interesting times, like leading up to an election, how the election and potential re-election plays a role into responses, right?
How he handles this, it could be so argued, how he handles this, because foreign policy to date has been one of the brighter spots, regardless of how you think of his specific handling or rhetoric. Foreign policy has still been a decently, relatively bright spot for the president. How he handles this, especially given escalation, could wind up, in addition to deciding a lot more extra-nationally, could end up deciding the election.
It could, because people will remember this before they remember all the things that happened.
The economy is going to become a number two thing there. They're going to look now at him as a commander-in-chief, and his competence, such as anybody thinks it is, will be put to the test here. And to me, at this point now, he's chosen the men that surround him, Pompeo and Bolton and company. So with that, to me, it does speak very well of him that he's resisted the darker demons at his shoulder, raving at his ear here. Yeah. It's impressive to me that we've not gone ahead and gone to conflict with Iran, because and it's like Lindsey Graham, like Senator Graham, just please stop.
Yeah.
Both him and Representative Devin Nunes, don't go away mad. Just go away.
Yeah. Well, I do think that people who do feel that there's potential for some major issues should not sleep well at night that the most moderate person within that administration right now is the president of the United States. That's a bit unnerving, because he's not a politician. He's never been in the military. He has no military experience. He has no national security experience.
He has backed up his bona fides, though, of not wanting us to get involved in greater conflict.
Yeah.
So
hopefully,
he's got a little bit of latitude given him.
Hopefully, whatever that conscience is, or whatever might be bubbling up,
survival instinct,
could be. I hope that's. I mean, ultimately, he's the one that gets to choose if it happens or not. So maybe we should be happy that he is the moderate, but he's the moderate with zero experience compared to the guys that are around him. So, you know, I hope that there isn't a manipulation or
Bolton's got that bitchin' stash.
Woof.
That Monopoly guy mustache that John Bolton's got, I gotta say, it's impressive. I wonder if he's named it.
The ultimate flavor saver. I named it. God. Yeah. Oh, well. Well, hey, we're at 30 minutes. It's been a little Friday news roundup, and my voice.
Friday?
Yeah, it is. My voice is steadily going, so I think we're going to call it at this. So
yeah, you get some rest and tell the missus that I said hey, and I apologize for taking up your daytime.
Oh, no, not at all. She's not quite home yet, so it's okay. So, yep. Well, until next time, my friend.
Au revoir.
We'll see ya.